Dynamite!
It's Dynamite!
Wednesday night, Dynamite!
So Dynamite!
This is awesome! It's a dick, it's a dick, it's a dick! Hey, everybody, have a great time!
It's Dynamite!
I'm not one of these f***ing goof podcasters out there. I am Don Tony, Wednesday night, Dynamite! Familia, why were they surprised? Why were they shocked? I had a migraine Wednesday night, floating around social media, floating around the podcast world, the message boards, the forums. Oh, the crowd, very mixed towards CM Punk's return announcement made by Tony Khan. Look at the crowd. Listen to them. 60 to 70% boos. I never heard that towards CM Punk before. Why is this so negative? Are you kidding me? For 1 year, for a year, the elements within AEW, the coddled elite that despise CM Punk. For a year, they have been pushing this narrative online that CM Punk bad, CM Punk selfish, CM Punk unprofessional, elite good, elite want AEW to develop and prosper. Elite give fans what they want. And what happens? That coddled elite within AEW, that agenda is carried out through certain elements of the media. Just use common sense. If it coincides with an AEW, if it coincides with that aspect of management, if it is positive, then across the board, everything will be talked about in unison. But when something goes against AEW, when something is challenged, when something could look like it's the wrong thing, you had those elements in the media that would shoot it down, would put shit out there that was fed to them by that coddled elite. Think about the anti-narrative towards Thunder Rosa for so long. Look at Dax Harwood. That guy starts a podcast, defends his friend CM Punk, gives his honest opinion about things. And is this podcast still going? It certainly isn't. We ain't stupid. He could talk about family. He could talk about mental health. And I'm not trying to downplay that. But we all know the deal. You know, he never in a million years ever expected the lashback that he got online. Hey, you know, if I'm real with everyone and I'm straight up, you know, people respect that. Very hard to do when you have the people who matter within AEW are doing the opposite. Every time you would hear something about Miro, hey, why isn't AEW using him? Why is this? Da-de-de-ma. He's working all this time, you know, getting paid all this time and not working at all. And then it catches on. And then fans start complaining in unison. Well, and what happens? Boom. Report comes out. Miro refused to job, would not work this, would not do that. And then everybody is like, oh, whoa, well, fuck Miro. And then Andrade. You know, that's Charlotte's husband. Did you hear about with Sammy and how unprofessional? And he teases that he's going to leave and quit. Fuck him. And Tony Khan, I want to like the guy. I can't call him a victim. When someone is a multi-billionaire, you know, you put yourself in a position that he is trapped. He is trapped. He can't simply go to Craigslist or Monster or go to a job listing and fill all the positions that would need to be filled if those elements in the elite behind the scenes, and it's not just Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, there's many others as well. If they got up and walked out and quit, which probably would never happen for legal reasons, but even if they all decided, you know what, we're not renewing, we're going to leave and that's it, he can't simply just go and fill those positions overnight. He has to sit there and take it and take it and take it. The MJF stuff. I mean, I don't know if you all saw the media scrum after this recent Double or Nothing. And I laughed because I know MJF, total character. And listen, he lives his gimmick, obviously. But if you think in your right mind that Tony Khan was sitting there with those facial reactions, that you think that he had no idea that MJF was going to say the stuff he was going to say, if you actually think that, that Tony Khan is the ultimate pussy, unprofessional, should not be in charge of AEW. You don't sit there like a fucking goof and let your world champion, you know, tease that he's going to walk out of that company. It's a storyline. It's a storyline. Look, his contract, I personally think they already extended it. But even if he did leave in 2024, why not play it into a storyline? Why not play it that he could possibly get up and leave? So I look at it as storyline, and that's why I laugh off Tony Khan's facial reactions. Just, if you didn't see it, just look at MJF's post, you know, scrum, and look at Tony Khan's facial reactions as MJF is saying what he's saying. It makes Tony Khan, you know what it looks like? I hate using, you know, the word cuck, but it's almost like a guy who's sitting next to his girlfriend or his wife, and his wife is saying all this stuff about, oh, I would fuck him, and I would, oh, man. There's actually a video that just popped up on social media a couple of days ago that somebody was, a couple was being interviewed in a mall, and somebody asked the husband, you know, if you can get a one night only that you could sleep with anybody you want in the world and your wife would give you a pass, who would it be? And the husband said, I wouldn't do that. I love my wife. And then the guy, the interviewer, asked the wife, you know, if your husband gave you a pass one night you could sleep with anyone, who would it be? And she starts naming all these hip-hop artists and everything. And you look at the guy's reaction and you know this is not staged. And I'm like, if that ever happened to me, I'd fucking break up, get a divorce, fucking throw my significant other out of the house before they even got home. Tony Khan sitting there and taking the reactions like that, nobody in that position of power should ever look like a goof like that. This is not Vince McMahon 1983, where everybody thinks that Vince is just an announcer, just an interviewer. You know, and he's, you know, people are saying horrible things and he's just sitting there looking at him like, ah, that's not right. How could you say that? Blah, blah, blah. So for a year, they have been pushing this anti-CM Punk narrative. And for a year, elements of the media have been portraying CM Punk and Ace Steel and everybody else as horrible. And for the last couple of months, my friends, do you honestly think that the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Nakazawa, QT Marshall, and you just go down the line. You know, you think all of these people were all left in the dark when Tony Khan is negotiating about creating Collision, that Tony Khan is negotiating the return of CM Punk. This is all done through lawyers. This is all done through the legal side of things. You think every time Warner Brothers, Warner Media, you know, would like to have, you know, him showcased, you think all these people were left in the dark? Think about that elite media online that for months were acting like, you know, it is possible that CM Punk and the deal fell through. It is possible, blah, 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 blah. It is possible. These are the same people that 24 hours before WrestleMania 38 were actually having the nerve to go online and telling people, you know, it is possible that Cody Rhodes and the WWE, that deal fell through, and it is possible that he doesn't show up at WrestleMania and take on Seth Rollins. You know, how's about getting the answers? And if you don't have the fucking answers, you keep your mouth fucking shut. I could sit here and for the next year, do podcasts and give you all wrong stuff and just use, it is possible that Bray Wyatt will return as the Fiend. It is possible that blah, 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 that we'll do this. It is possible that Thunder Rosa, you know, how's about getting the answers? You think all these people were left in the dark for months? They all knew. They all knew. But they, because they all dislike CM Punk, they certainly were not going to go along with the program. And again, Tony Khan is left caught in the middle. There's no kumbaya moment where the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, CM Punk, and Ace Steel are sitting in a jacuzzi smoking cigars and all, you know, talking about sports. You know, the people don't like each other. But in this world, you have to sometimes work with people you don't like. I don't know about you. I've been a wrestling fan since 79. Hopefully none of you have been a fan since that long, because that would make you old as well. But I don't know about you. But all I know is that since I've been doing a wrestling hotline since 97, there were times, even when I first launched my website in 1999, there were times where we would do conversations talking about fights in pro wrestling, legendary fights, Arn Anderson, Sid Vicious, this person, you know, not, years back, JBL and Joey Styles. You know, there are times where people have had fights. And guess what? They still work for the same company. You know, the way everything, listen, honestly, if CM Punk never got injured, CM Punk would have been back a long time ago. I truly believe that. The injury really fucked things up as far as perception goes. The injury to CM Punk is what allowed this narrative to, you know, ferment and develop and snowball over the last year. Because even though that fight is unfortunate, what took place at the media scrum in 2022, it's unfortunate, no question. But to think that a little bit of a fight, you know, like, yeah, somebody got bit, somebody got punched out and this and that, that it would cause such a legal mess for a year. I mean, what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with coddled pussies at the end of the day. And it's not that cut and dry because, like I said, CM Punk had a major injury, which forced him to be out of action for a very long period of time. And here's something else that everybody has to think about. And I know it's something we've talked about before. CM Punk has high-priced attorneys. He can afford it. Not everybody can afford a high-priced attorney. Yeah, Tony Khan has legal counsel. But the point is that when you're negotiating CM Punk returning or doing this or doing that or whatever, you know, it's all done through the legal team. This is not simply, oh, let's have a barbecue, let's have a conference call, let's do a Zoom, let's do this, and like, oh, everything is all forgiven. You know, you apologize. That's not how it works. You're dealing with millions and millions of dollars. And to think that after a year of how CM Punk has been portrayed online by the people who matter, you don't think that AEW fans would be bitter towards him? Look at the Elite. They have been portrayed on TV as big-time baby faces. They're put in this position. We talked about it a while ago, that they have a big dilemma at Wembley if they do the Elite versus FTR and CM Punk. Why? Because everybody's a baby face right now. What are you going to do? Split it down the middle? Yeah, you can do that. And actually, I kind of would like that idea. But there ain't no way the Elite are going to make themselves look like the bad guys here. In the annals of history, when we look back at this, they want to make sure that in the annals of history, CM Punk was the one that fucked up. CM Punk instigated it. CM Punk sparked it on camera, off camera. That is not going to change. And they certainly are not going to portray themselves in a different light. That doesn't mean that they're not going to turn heel down the line. But as far as looking back on this in history, CM Punk is going to be labeled as the one that instigated it all. You know, when recently, there was this dramatization put online, this self-induced drama that CM Punk was served legal papers, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, we laughed at it because, you know, of course he's served with legal papers. When you change the contract and you add certain things and he's getting paid for this and this is going to extend here and this happens, it's all got to be done in writing. It's not simply, hey, Punk, you were out of action for 6 months. You got to stay an extra 6 months. Oh, okay, no problem, boss. No, everything has to be done in writing. And as far as collision goes, look, you look at the ticket sales. I don't know if anybody's paid attention to it recently. The ticket sales for collision are doing just fine. I don't know. I don't have it in front of me, but they set up the building for a little over 8,000 seats for a Saturday night with no card announced. You know, we have an idea of some of the wrestlers are going to be there, but we don't know what card is going to be announced. You know, to have 7,000 tickets sold, that's pretty damn good. And you cannot, you know, start looking at that. And even with the Wembley stuff, you know, everybody looks at Wembley and then they see a house show that only draws 2,000 tickets. Like, wow, look at this. Look at reality. This and that. Yeah, Wembley is almost like a WrestleMania and it's happening overseas. And the first time they're in the UK. So, of course, it's going to be a moment that everybody wants to be a part of. You know, but as far as AEW Collision, you know, the ticket sales are just fine. I read today, people were laughing at it, that, oh, ever since CM Punk was announced, they sold 400 tickets. People were laughing like, 400 tickets, that's nothing. And the thing is that there's not that many tickets left. It's like less than 1,000. The ticket sales were just fine. But the bottom line is, CM Punk has been officially announced for returning. And if you did not get the opportunity to hear or see Tony Khan's announcement from Wednesday's Dynamite, I'm going to play the audio for you right now. It's only about a minute, but I'm kind of glad that we're not doing video right now because it forces you to just imagine what that crowd reaction was like when they played that announcement. So here it is, everyone. For anybody that wants to go check it out, Tony Khan officially announcing the return of CM Punk.
The last few weeks, we've made some announcements regarding the debut of AEW Saturday Night Collision, starting June 17th at the United Center in Chicago, Illinois. I'm here tonight to give you a little more information about the debut of AEW Collision. I'm here to announce that AEW Collision, beginning June 17th, will feature CM Punk.
Bombshell announcement from Tony Khan on Collision.
Wow.
Holy smokes.
That's awesome.
Look at the CM Punk shirts and the reaction.
Like Mussolini. Wow. Bombshell announcement by the boss right there.
So there you go. Didn't surprise me at all the way everything has been pushed over the last 12 months. And I don't think it's going to change as much either. You know, understand, we have Forbidden Door coming up. So Forbidden Door obviously is going to focus on New Japan versus AEW. You know, a little bit of other elements mixed in as well. But, you know, something that we've talked about for quite a while now. You keep that narrative of split rosters, that the wrestlers that don't get along with CM Punk will be on Wednesdays, and the ones that do are indifferent, they'll work Saturdays. Well, what happens when you have a pay-per-view and both groups are together? You think that CM Punk will never appear on a Wednesday Dynamite because the Elite, who are there also, don't like him? You think this is a Mike Awesome ECW moment where he jumps ship and goes to WCW, and when he has to drop the title to Taz, they have to actually bring him in through a back door. He drops the title, then they have to rush him out the back door so he isn't around the locker room. You know, they're not going to have separate areas for these guys. They have to work together. And that's the deal. But as far as TV goes, as far as social media, as far as the news media, that split will continue because we have All in a couple of months at Wembley. And if you're going to push that idea of the Elite versus CM Punk, you can't start giving this impression that everybody is getting along and they're working together for the betterment of the company. No, you're going to see a lot of this continue. And as you see it continue, it goes back to what I said well over a year ago. Why report the story, the actual story, when you could be part of the story? And there's going to be agendas pushed online simply because they feel that they are helping contribute to the story. And look, you want to keep your connections happy. You want to keep them pleased. You know, when you look at some of the news media out there and the elements that you know they get along with behind the scenes in AEW, they don't want to jeopardize that relationship and be left with nothing. Why do you think when you see like these Boozers and Zero News and some of these other places out there, why do you think nobody in the media world and the news world really takes them seriously? Because they know at the end of the day, they have no sources, no connections. They try to give sausage. And listen, I did it as a mockery last year. You remember in August of last year with the Vince McMahon, Brock Lesnar thing, I told everybody right up front, guys, gals, nobody in WWE told me this. But I'm going to show you how easy it is to report news. You know, if you pay very close attention and you look at common sense, how you could literally report a story and have no sources whatsoever. And I said, when Brock Lesnar walked out, and I said, Vince McMahon texted him and said, listen, if you care about me, you care about the company, I still own it and this and that, then you go back in there and you do what you do. You walk out on WWE, you're walking out on me as well. And Brock Lesnar was going to return that night. And what happened? Brock Lesnar not only was on SmackDown that night, he tipped his hat to Vince McMahon. And tons and tons of places reported the story and credited me for it. Don Tony reports that Vince McMahon reached out to Brock Lesnar and said, if you walk out on WWE, you walk out on me and everything I've created. And it just, I did it to show mockery. That's why whenever you see me write online sausage, you know, for those that are not aware, you know, I want to make you aware now because I know we haven't talked about that aspect of it recently. It's me telling you, guys, I'm not claiming to have a scoop, you know, without sources. I'm putting something out there to show you how common sense it is that, you know, this is going to happen or this is not going to happen. And yes, once in a while, I will get news. I will get a scoop. If I want answers to certain things, I could reach out to certain people and get it. But I don't want to be a journalist. I like opining. All the shows I do are opining. JD from New York, opining. Jason Solomonster, opining. Kevin Castle, opining. We opine. What do? We express our opinions, our reactions, our thoughts. We analyze. We discuss. That's what we do. We don't break news. If I really get something and I want to share, of course I will. But I don't want to be known for that. I leave that for the professionals out there and the ones who claim to be professionals that they're not. So I wanted to get into the CM Punk stuff right up front. Now, obviously, if you're seeing the length of this episode, it is much shorter than your usual Wednesday night Dynamite episodes. And the reason why I'm going to keep this pretty short tonight is, number one, we're going to be doing a show Saturday morning. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of reaction by all of you, you know, as far as what went down with CM Punk. Plus, on Friday, we have SmackDown with Roman's 1,000-day celebration. What's going to happen with Jimmy Uso? Now there's buzz that Cody Rhodes may show up, which would be fascinating, although I don't know if that's really going to happen. Maybe dark match. That kind of makes sense for me. But we got a show in less than 36 hours. So I want to just keep this straight and to the point. But my thoughts on CM Punk's return, absolutely needed, absolutely necessary, and people need to work with each other, even if they don't like each other and even if they don't get along. You know, these are millionaires. These are people, for the most part, that are represented by legal counsel. They're under contract. This is not the indies. You know, I know a lot of people feel that AEW sometimes feels like an indie promotion. It is not. There is a lot of legalese. You can get your ass in a shitload of trouble. You can't simply just act on emotion. But again, unfortunately, because of how many people that work behind the scenes in AEW that also work on camera, you know, Tony Khan is forced to, you know, allow a lot of what goes on, a lot of stuff that's leaked, a lot of stuff that is teased, because he cannot simply just replace a lot of those people. He can't. You know, that's why if you notice, a lot of people that work behind the scenes of WWE, even Impact Wrestling and others, they work behind the scenes and that is it. You get an on-air character once in a blue moon, but for the most part, the people that work behind the scenes, you shouldn't have to think about those people. And especially when you're on camera as well, you know, you kind of put yourself in a favorable position. How many times have we all turned around and said, why the fuck is QT Marshall getting as much TV time as he does? I'm not going to crap on the guy. Guy works his ass off. But that's his reward for doing so much stuff that he does behind the scenes. You see some of these other names that get thrown out on Dynamite. And I don't want to start picking names because it's kind of unfair to them, but you could just look at some of the matches announced and you say to yourself, why is this person on the show? Why am I still seeing this person, you know, almost every other week? And you realize that, you know, getting a little bit of reward for what they do behind the scenes. All right. Well, I can tell you this. One good thing about the fact that we are recording this Thursday night instead of Wednesday night is the rating is out for Dynamite. And they did a pretty nice number, 923,000 viewers, up from last week's 846. But I will tell you this, pretty fascinating to see how Hour 2 ended up as far as the ratings go for May 31st. Now, you had your Big Bang Theory lead-in with 1,040,000. Then, you know, the second quarter, which is really the quarter I always pay attention to more than anything, you know, that did 999,000 viewers. So they still kept a pretty freaking big audience for the second quarter, which was the Blackpool Combat Club versus Bandido and the Lucha Bros. And then you had the backstage segment with the Young Bucks and Hangman Page, Juice Robinson, Jay White, FTR, Ricky Starks. You know, it was a lot of nonstop for that quarter. But by the time you got to the end, which was Adam Cole and Britt Baker versus Chris Jericho and Saraya in the mixed tag match, that was the lowest quarter of the night, 839,000 viewers. 2 weeks ago, when we had the cage match between Omega and Jon Moxley, that quarter, they did 900,000 plus. You had a big boost for the last two quarters. So, you know, it's interesting that, you know, and listen, I don't want to use the term blood and guts, but I think AEW is putting themselves in a position that unless you have blood, guts, weapons, you know, that fans, you know, get a little bit numb after a while, and regular matches, and even if you have some chaos, you know, it doesn't draw like it used to. Think about this, even up to a year ago. When was the last time that we would talk about some of the elements within AEW that would, you know, when the show closed out, they only did 700,000 viewers? Over a year ago, to think that Bryan Danielson, Jon Moxley, Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, Chris Jericho, and others, to get into the sevens, and even in some cases, the sixes on a Wednesday, I don't give a shit what is opposing them TV-wise for that night. We never in a million years would ever think those numbers. Even when you hear about the Blackpool Combat Club wrestling on a rampage, and you look at those quarter hours, and you say to yourself, wow, they can't even draw 400,000 viewers for those type of people on the card. You know, that's kind of surprising, but it's not. I think AEW has got to be a little bit careful going forward. You know, I announced earlier today that the next Q&A that I'm going to do is Thursday, June 8th. And if you want to be part of that episode, if you have a question you want me to answer, go to the community section on YouTube and you could post a question there. But the first question that came in to me was, hey, DT, what do you think the rating is going to be for Collision's debut? And someone else asked, what do I think that the rating is going to average out to be going forward? And I haven't really thought about it as of yet. I will give you an answer very soon, next week. But I will say this, you know, you think of the actual writing of AEW. And I'll give you an example. Hangman Page realigning with the Elite. You know, and it was a cool moment, and it definitely is a nice thing to see. It'll help Hangman Page. The, you know, Double or Nothing, Anarchy in the Arena match was wild and all that. But, you know, you see people online and like, oh, that's cinema. That is long-term booking and this and that. And let's be honest, you know, some of this long-term things happening are not necessarily because there is a storyline that continues even every 2 weeks on television. It's just that things are just forgot about or delayed. There's so many things going on at the same time. Things have to be put on the back burner. Look at Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. You know, some people think that that match is still going to happen between the two, and I do believe that it will. But it's been since November that all this shit has been going down. And you're going to tell me that since November, this is long-term writing? No, they fucking forgot about it for a month. The only reason why I'm mentioning this is because of Collision. You know, one thing that we all got to start thinking about is the writing aspect of this. You know, what is the writing team going to look like for Collision? And I don't mean like a set of people around the table and people outside of wrestling WWE setup. I'm not saying that. But, you know, do you think that a lot of the wrestlers have their own creative freedom to the point where they can on the fly, you know, like do things on their own? And Tony Khan's like, yeah, go with it. Go with it. You know, you do that on the indies. You got to be a little bit more careful when it comes to TV and pay-per-view, especially now with the announcement of CM Punk's return, with the debut of Collision, with Wembley coming up, with Forbidden Door coming up, and the TV deal is going to be coming up soon. You know, believe me when I tell you, this deal with Warner Media and AEW is happening. It just wasn't going to happen the way the news media portrayed it. The billion-dollar deal was never announced. You know, things have to take a certain progress. And you got to understand this, too. You know, AEW's contract had an option year, I think, 2024, and it was picked up. So they could take their sweet-ass time working out a new deal. And unfortunately for a lot of people out there, they put all their cards on the table and convinced everyone that something major was going to be announced at the Water Media Discovery Upfronts in Manhattan. And people, oh, $1.2 billion, this for five. Now, next year or late this year or next month, if AEW announces something and it ends up being $1 billion deal, you know what these guys say. See, I told you. See, I told you. They don't know. They don't know. They don't have that kind of connections. And I'm not saying, again, that the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, and some of these others behind the scenes, of course, they're part of, you know, the everyday goings with AEW. But when it comes to negotiating with WBD, these are attorneys involved. There is so, and again, you know, like we joked about over the last year when you had that big fallout at last year's media scrum. You know, every time somebody online, you know, wanted to challenge that, from Brian Last, Jim Cornette, to myself, Dave Shear, everybody else, you know, unfortunately for most of us, you know, we don't have direct contact with Tony Khan. We don't have direct contact with people there where you could actually challenge them. The closest anybody really got was Ariel Helwani. He was the closest to anybody challenging about this legal aspect of it. But you just throw that term out there. Oh, tell everybody that there's an ongoing investigation. And everybody's like, oh, okay, all right. So, you know, I can't challenge them because it's an ongoing investigation. And you see where that went. There was no ongoing investigation. Now, because of the amount of money that's involved and the importance of it, everybody has to sign clauses that they agree not to talk about it. So years from now, will we get the shoot interview that reveals the details? I doubt it. I doubt it. People will come up to their own conclusions and people will push a certain narrative. But getting back to the creative side of things, you know, if you think that the wrestlers have that much power in their own storylines, you look at Jericho and Adam Cole. You know, you look at Saraya and Britt Baker, even the mixed tag from Dynamite. You look at this whole storyline with Adam Cole and Chris Jericho. How much of that was those four, or even just Jericho and Adam Cole, having the power enough that they could just put this together themselves and Tony Khan's like, okay, go with it. If that's the case, what the hell are we going to have on Saturday night? Are the wrestlers going to have that much power to be able to creatively do certain things? So when you see, you know, certain things happen, like I used the Keith Lee Swerve Strickland example earlier, you know, it starts in November and we're now approaching June and shit still hasn't come to a head. And it ain't because this is cinema and a beautiful storyline being told for all these months. No, it was just put on the back burner. How does that change on Saturdays? You know, understand this. When people, and people have said this to me over the last couple of weeks, and I have politely not responded because I don't want to make them feel stupid. But when people said to me, oh, no, DT, understand this. You know, on Saturdays, you know, because all these wrestlers are going to be on Saturday nights, now they can actually focus on some of these storylines a little bit closer on Wednesdays, this and that. And then I think to myself, wait a minute. You know, with the exception of maybe Powerhouse Hobbs, or if Ricky Starks starts being featured on Saturday nights, when you're talking about Miro, when you're talking about Andrade, when you're talking about CM Punk, when you're talking about, these are people that have not been on TV. So you're talking about a third of the roster that has not been on TV. And some of the other elements have. So it's not going to change as much as you think. We may get straight up wrestling. We may get more of the wrestling aspect on Saturdays. But again, when you look at these ratings and you look at it closely, Chaos, Blood, Guts, and Weapons is the biggest draw in AEW. And you're not going to get this new wrestling audience that is, you know, like, that doesn't like the Weapons and the Blood and the Guts and the Disarray and is not thrilled about WWE. So now we're going to give them something that's going to be more about professional wrestling and more about, you know, in-depth storylines and about this. You know, you got to attract a lot of your AEW viewers to watch Saturday nights. And if they're getting numb to just regular wrestling matches and you always got to do these over-the-top gimmicks and, you know, pay-per-view quality lineups and Blood, Guts, and Weapons, again, just look at the ratings when they advertise like the Omega Moxley cage match, or they advertise a false count anywhere, they advertise, you know, some crazy stipulations with it. Those draw the numbers. And if you, that is what is attracting, you know, that extra 200,000-300,000 fans to stick around. What happens if you don't do that on a Saturday night? You know, I mean, am I going to stop what I'm doing and watch on a Saturday because Andrade's back on TV, because Miro's back on TV? CM Punk will be on maybe 10 to 15 minutes of a two-hour show. What do you do after that? You know, we absolutely love Thunder Rosa, you know, on this show, and you know, our extended family, majority of you out there love what she does. But, you know, it's also who she feuds with. So it's going to be really interesting to see how well this works. Again, I don't want to start throwing ratings predictions out there now, but I will say this. Absolutely, you will see some of the wrestlers that are going to be featured mostly on Saturday nights. You will see those wrestlers appear on Wednesdays. Maybe not every week. In fact, they won't be on every week simply because of scheduling and traveling. But for others, they're going to need some of those guys and gals on a Wednesday. So that's why I don't want to use roster split. You know, traveling groups, two separate groups traveling, yes. But the way to portray it right now, they try to portray it that, oh, CM Punk segregated to Saturday nights. This way he's not around the people that, you know, don't like him. And he can, you know, be the focus of collision. He is the draw and everything is fine. That's not how you do business. But you know, when you have Wembley coming up, and we don't even know what the match will be. I personally think we need CM Punk to have a feud with MJF. Not right now, but one of the first things CM Punk needs to do is, I never lost my championship. You know, I was never defeated for this championship. I should get an opportunity for a rematch. I absolutely want to see CM Punk try to go after MJF for that championship. I think that would make common sense for almost all of you out there. When it happens, I have no idea. So we'll see. We will see. So Double or Nothing happened this weekend. I watched, I'd say, about 90% of it. Some of the matches I skimmed through. I'll be honest with you, I was not a tremendous fan of the event. The crowd kind of poo-pooed it for me. And listen, for the people out there trying to make excuses for that Las Vegas crowd saying, oh, it was the acoustics, it was the way it was set up, bullshit. Bullshit. Because towards the end of FTR versus Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal, especially with that guitar shot to Aubrey Edwards, that crowd, you could hear them on TV. They were lit for certain elements. Anarchy in the Arena, that crowd was lit. So don't give me acoustic bullshit. I just think, you know, the fans are kind of numb of some of the basics. You know, it's got to be kind of anarchy, you know. But I thought the card overall was okay. You know, listen, props to AEW for taking the title off of Jay Cargill. If you tune into my show, you know, for quite a while now, I've been saying, get that belt off of her. Best thing that'll happen to her is get that belt off of her. It reminded me so much of Austin Theory with that briefcase towards the end. When I thought the night he lost that briefcase and everybody else was saying, wow, what a horrible way for him to lose that briefcase. I said that night, it's the best thing that'll happen to him. Now all the chains are broken. Now you could focus on the person, the wrestler, the character. Fuck the briefcase. And Jade Cargill, you know, listen, as I don't even know what would be the right word to use, as unimpressive her undefeated streak may appear to some of you out there, give her a lot of credit, because she came into that company with very little experience. And her first exposure was with Shaquille O'Neal, and that just started her career. I mean, you really think about it, she got thrown right into, you know, the fire. And yeah, her matches many times were squashes against names that, you know, it was kind of ridiculous. But for someone with very little of a wrestling background, I'm talking about working indies or other feds, or to come in there and not only be, you know, a name, a player on TV, but be a champion and a focal point of a division. You got to give Jay Cargill credit for, you know, handling it as professional as she did and handling it as best as she could. It wasn't perfect. It was nowhere near perfect, but it was pretty obvious over the last maybe 2-3 months that now it felt like you're just continuing a streak because you're afraid to break it, or you don't know what to do with Jay Cargill once you break it, or Jay Cargill will lose a lot of cred if she drops that title. The best thing Nick did was take that belt off her. I just wish it didn't happen the way it did, because she fought almost 9 minutes against Taya Valkyrie. If she would have had a 1 minute match or a 2 minute match, and I'm not saying that Taya Valkyrie should have lost in 2 minutes, but I'm saying if Jade would have won in a minute or two, then you could go on the mic and say, I haven't even broken a sweat. Anyone else out there? And then you bring someone else out that, you know, she beats in a minute. Oh, I'm feeling good. I'm not ready to leave yet. You know, give me someone else. And then you have Chris Statlander come out, and Chris Statlander beats her. Then she could say, I wasn't prepared, this and that. And I'm sure that's what they'll do. I'm sure we're going to start seeing, you know, I wasn't prepared for that night, and I didn't, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure she'll get a rematch, absolutely deserving of one. But Chris Statlander, definitely the AEW fans' choice to be the one to dethrone Jade Cargill. That is, if you do a search on my channel, that is the name that we brought up about maybe 3 weeks ago. And, you know, what I had heard was if she is not ready to return to the ring, but is ready to go for All In, that will be the night that she will beat Jade Cargill for the belt. She was obviously ready to return sooner. We had a feeling that she was going to return sooner because you remember we talked about her doing a lot of media appearances for AEW. They showed up at that, I think, St. Louis Cardinals game, and she was, you know, physically involved in that. You know, so I'm glad. I'm glad that they made that move. And Chris Statlander definitely is a legit person to be the one to defeat Jade Cargill. Everything else on the card, you know, it was good. Wardlow impressed the shit out of me. I mean, you know, for him to do that Jeff Hardy, you know, swanton off the ladder, you know, onto Christian through the Luchasaurus through the table. That's crazy. That is just absolutely crazy. You know, it's a moment that will replay for years, but that's not a moment that Wardlow needs to do. You know, I know probably for him that was, you know, the moment that he wanted to do, and I'm sure nobody pushed him to do that, but sometimes you got to say, hey, big man, I know you want to do that, but no, we can't take any chance. Big man, you know, you got your whole career ahead of you, so as much as I enjoyed that spot, don't do it again. Everything else on the card, you know, Adam Cole versus Jericho, I hated. Orange Cassidy winning the Blackjack Battle Royale was kind of predicted. I just wonder if Swerve Strickland is going to be the one to dethrone Orange Cassidy. You know, they had Orange Cassidy and Darby Allin team up on Dynamite, and it was a fun match, and I liked them as a tag team, but, you know, if you're going to keep Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy as a steady tag team going forward, then take that international championship off of him. Very interesting to see Jungle Boy and Hook realigning. Because early this year, remember they pushed that hey, you know, it's time that I'm not a tag team guy and I want to be a singles guy and focus on championships and gold. And yeah, Jungle Boy is back with a tag team partner. So wouldn't surprise me if they possibly go after FTR for those tag titles. Right now, FTR looks like they're going to do a program with Juice Robinson and Jay White. I don't know how long that goes. And some people even think that Juice Robinson and Jay White could very well win those tag titles. You know, you got to think, that's another thing you got to think about Collision. What championships are going to be defended on Collision? You definitely need to have some championships, and you can't just be Ring of Honor stuff. Samoa Joe's going to be on that show, but you can't simply just have Ring of Honor belts defended. That ain't going to fly. It may fly for a week or two, but it ain't going to fly in the long haul. So my favorite match at Double or Nothing was probably the Four Pillars match. Anarchy in the Arena was crazy. You know, that spot where Nick Jackson super kicking Moxley and exploding. If you go on some special effects, like Hollywood, you know, special effects websites, there's some pretty cool video. In fact, you do a YouTube search and you could see there's some pretty cool video that shows, you know, it's by the certain like pressure, and I don't want to start getting into science here, but it was a very cool spot. As far as the thumbtacks, bare feet, you know, I got thrown through a table with thumbtacks. And let me tell you something, the adrenaline rush, you know, you feel it, but you are so into it that it doesn't hurt as much as you think. Getting the majority of the thumbtacks in the heel is probably the smartest thing that they did. Because that is the ball of your foot, you know, the heel part is the hardest part. And, you know, of course it hurts, but it definitely is nowhere near the pain of the other part of the foot. But, you know, as crazy as that looked and as painful as that looked, you know, hey, you're the one that decided to do that spot. So, yeah, whatever pain comes, yeah, you're the one that chose to do it. I felt bad for the lack of reaction for Sabu. And I don't think it has anything to do with his social media, this and that and this. You know, some of what he wrote was extremely offensive. We talked about it last week as far as, you know, what has transpired since and why he was welcomed to be in that spot on AEW for that night. I did get a kick out of Jim Ross getting pissed off because during the Adam Cole Chris Jericho match, I think it was Angelo Parker, like, ran into the announcer's table and knocked his coffee to the floor. So, and it was not necessary. Like, Angelo Parker just literally just ran into the table, and Jim Ross was legit pissed. So the car was okay. I just enjoyed NXT a little bit more. And it's, I don't know, it just, the vibe was different. You know, you felt like everybody out there was, you know, really trying to show the world that they, you know, belong and they have earned, you know, the Ilya versus Dijak. And look, I'm not doing a recap here. Kevin and I did a loaded show Tuesday night. It's on DonTony.com. If you have not downloaded it yet, you need to. He and I discussed Night of Champions. We discussed NXT Battleground. We also discussed NXT Tuesday night. And we discussed some AEW stuff as well. It was much more than just a double review. But I will say this. Ilya versus Dijak, match of the year candidate. Ilya is a madman. And Dijak is, we know how good he is. Him feuding with Keith Lee is still my highlight of his career. But going forward, I want to see Dijak and Ilya as a tag team. I want to see, listen, I know about the news sites that, you know, claim that Saturday night was the swan song for a lot of people who are on NXT's Battleground, and they were wrong. They were completely wrong. But Ilya, I wouldn't bring him to the main roster yet. I'd like to see him and Dijak team up. I think they actually could legit, you know, something is missing with the men's tag team division in NXT. And Tony D'Angelo and Stax versus Gallus is not the answer. You know, I know they're going through the motions because it is developmental. Sometimes you will see people pushed in matches that you might feel that they're not ready for it yet. But, you know, I think Gallus versus Ilya and Dijak is much more money than to see down the line Stax and Tony D'Angelo. And everybody knows my feelings on Tony D'Angelo. I'm a fan. I just feel that something is seriously missing. And now they're doing this whole arrest storyline. I don't know how I feel about it. And Tiffany Stratton. Tiffy time. That just bombed. That was awful on Tuesday. I give her a pass. It's only one night. But man, was that just awful. It was the drizzling shits. I will say, though, I love that Ali, Mustafa Ali, and Baron Corbin showed up. If you follow my shows, we called that about 6 weeks ago, a month ago, whenever the draft was. Remember when they were free agents and I said, they're going to show up in NXT. And if you go back and you check out that episode, who did I say that Mustafa Ali's first feud should be against? No, not Carmelo Hayes, but Wes Lee. And it looks like they're going to go Wes Lee versus Mustafa Ali. I think that's going to be outstanding. It is not a demotion. It's catchy wording, the way people write it online. Yeah, people go, oh, he was in Saudi Arabia. Now look what they did to him. Oh, fuck that. Seriously. You see what? I'm not saying that Mustafa Ali or Baron Corbin is going to rejuvenate their careers, get the Mandy Rose treatment or the push. And by the way, Mandy Rose, it's a lot of buzz, everyone, behind the scenes that Mandy Rose may be returning. Don't know when, but she may be returning. She was spotted recently hanging out with Cora Jade, JC Jane, and a few others. She wants to return. And this deal with Endeavor, listen, this perception of a hiring freeze, it's not 100%. You know, some deals are negotiated during this time. You look at Logan Paul's a perfect example. Trish Stratus, they actually worked out a little bit to, you know, get a bigger payday for her. And she's going to stick around a little bit longer to help Zoe Stark. But you know, it's not cut and dry that, oh, because the deal emerging, you know, they can't work out any deals. It's just right now, it's not the focus. But Mandy Rose returning to NXT, I don't know about NXT. I would rather see her go to the main roster. The only way I would be fine with Mandy Rose going back to NXT is if Toxic Attraction with her reform. They just did that weaponized cage match, and I know what you're going to say, that even though we would prefer JC Jane and Gigi Dolan as a tag team, the way they have pushed this feud on TV, it would make absolutely no sense. You don't kill each other the way they did, and then suddenly they decide they, oh yeah, we'll be a tag team again. You know, they have gone so far with this feud, it would really look stupid if they realigned. But the only way I would rather see Mandy Rose back in NXT is if Toxic Attraction were to reform, and I don't see it happening right now. A lot would have to develop in order for that. And listen, it's the developmental. I get it. They could do it if they want, you know, and we don't have to overthink it. You know, people that are not going to suddenly not turn, you know, turn on NXT and change the channel because, oh, Toxic Attraction reforming makes no sense. I ain't watching this no more. Nobody's going to do that. But I think Mandy Rose has kind of done everything she could for NXT. And yeah, she could feud with Tiffany Stratton. Yeah, she could feud with Roxanne Perez. I know she dropped the title to Roxanne Perez, but there's still a feud there that could happen. There's a few other women that are on that roster now that really were not anywhere near where they were. Some weren't even there when Mandy Rose first left. So there are definitely opponents. I personally think, you know, if they bring back Mandy Rose, I think she's got to go to the main roster. I think she is definitely, I don't want to say she wore out a welcome. It's just now I think it would be a step back because she improved so good. She became so good in NXT. So I don't think I want to see Mandy Rose back in NXT. Again, unless it would make sense to reform Toxic Attraction. Blair Davenport ended up being the mystery person. You know, I was not thrilled about it. Listen, we threw a name out here many times. Not that I predicted it was going to be Blair Davenport. I wanted it to be Mandy Rose. Hell, I thought it could be Alexa Bliss. Now we find out Alexa Bliss is pregnant. Congratulations to her. And her husband, obviously. One thing we kept saying is, hey, you know, everybody believes that it's Blair Davenport. It's Blair Davenport. It's Blair Davenport. Well, it ended up being Blair Davenport. I think the highlight of her being revealed was Booker T's lack of reaction. Vic Joseph's like, Booker, it's Blair Davenport. And he said nothing. And people online truly believe that Booker T did not know who the hell it was. I'm sure Booker T will have to address it on his podcast. You know, he does accept super chats. So I'm sure somebody's going to throw a super chat to him, say, Booker, Book, did you know that was Blair Davenport? I'm sure he knew. You know, the commentators get informed beforehand what to expect at certain elements of the card that night. So I believe that he knew. I'd be shocked if he said, I had no idea. All right. We're going to start wrapping this up. Because believe it or not, I have no notes. I didn't plan on putting any notes together. I will say this because I know I joked about it on Monday. But I want to just throw this out here. And I kind of think I'd rather wait for Saturday so I could show visuals. Because I think visuals in this case would mean a lot more. But, you know, the AEW Fight Forever video game is coming out very, very soon. And there's going to be some updated graphics. You know, CM Punk is going to be, you know, factored back in. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do as far as cover art goes with the box. I know overseas they're still going to have Punk on some of the boxes. But the thing is this, you know, whenever you see early stages of the game, you're going to see templates. And, you know, the video of certain wrestlers, and it might not be the final product. Plus, any video game you play, you know, if you turn a certain way, or if you, you know, see someone getting up, or I'm talking about wrestling video games go, you know, it's not going to look perfect. The lighting, you know, there's so many things that could distort it. And I really kind of felt bad for Eddie Kingston over the weekend. I mean, I laughed too, I'm not going to lie, but somebody had posted some screenshots of Eddie Kingston in a video game. It looked like some 50-year-old, like middle-aged, single guy that lives in his mom's basement still, balding, weird, wild look with the eyes. It looked like it just like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I actually went on Google Images and I typed in 50-year-old bald single man. And I wanted to, and I wrote fat too. And, you know, I was hoping to God that my picture didn't show up, but I'm not bald. But I wanted to see like examples of fat, balding, 50-year-old single guys. And all the pictures that came up, I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God, I feel so horrible for Eddie Kingston. But luckily, some video came out in the last couple of days. And yes, definitely props to AEW for being the ones to put it out. But we actually saw the intro for Eddie Kingston and some of the gameplay of him. He looks fine. He looks fine. It's just that somebody caught an earlier version of it with the perfect lighting and the way it just made him look like ridiculous. I mean, it was funny. I'm not going to lie. And listen, you even today, there's a whole bunch of screenshots floating around today about Jay Cargill. And if you want to go look at it, I mean, I could bring it up Saturday if somebody wants me to, but just look up AEW versus WWE 2K23. Somebody put side by side what Jay Cargill looks like in AEW game and 2K23. And it's, I can't even describe what the AEW, you know, portrait looks like. It looks like Mike Judge drew it in the 90s for a Beavis and Butthead cartoon. It just looks weird. But I'm saying to myself, before I jump the gun and go with it, I said, nah, this has got to be an early, early template. It can't be. It just can't be. And listen, I know this game is not going to be perfect. I know people are going to put it under a microscope. You know, everybody is trying to get noticed. You know, not everybody, but you know how it goes on social media. You got to get attention any way possible. All I know is no matter how glitchy this game is when it comes out, no matter how goofy some of the graphics may look, it fails to compare to what we went through with that ECW video game in what, 2000? It was the worst. It is still, for me, the worst wrestling video game I've ever played. And I will never forget that night. I've talked about it on these shows at nauseam for 20 plus years. I drove for round trip almost 3 hours to get the game because I was supposed to get a Video Game Central where, you know, I used to do some work with the autograph signs for WWE and everything like that. But I had to go all the way to Long Island and get it. And I put it in my house and I put it in the game. And I think it was PlayStation, right? I don't know. It might have been PlayStation, but I put it in the game, or PlayStation 2 it might have been. And like, consciously, you know, like I'm playing it, I'm like, oh, this is awesome. I get to play my favorites. And subconsciously, my brain is saying to me, what the fuck is this? It was beyond awful. I mean, it's just the worst thing imaginable. It was Legends of Wrestling blew the doors off of the ECW game. And people forgot, Legends of Wrestling came out not too long from that time that the ECW video game came out. So I don't care how glitchy this AEW video game is, it's still going to be a trillion times better than what we dealt with the debut of ECW. So you got to understand something. You know, WWF video games have been around forever. Since the 80s, we've been playing WWF video games. So, you know, you were, it's not like you're following a new promotion and they've advanced so much that they're finally getting their own video game. You're like, holy shit. WCW, I think, would probably be the best comparison, because WCW really didn't have any video games until the 90s. And I know there was the Japanese bootleg that had some WCW names on it. But when the WCW games came out, they were pretty fucking cool. WCW versus the World, I think it was. There was one that was amazing. At that time, the WCW games kicked ass. But as far as a small promotion that you followed since day one in his existence, and then they finally have their own video game, that doesn't happen often. It happened with Impact Wrestling, NWA, well, TNA Impact, and it's happening with AEW, and it happened with ECW. And of the three, AEW is going to blow the doors off. I mean, technology obviously has gotten a lot better as well. That helps. But I think the game will be fine. I think people will still love it. Now I'm seeing footage that you could actually like ride on a skateboard to the ring. And you get, you know, your diehards are like, oh, what the fuck does it have to do with wrestling? No, it doesn't matter. It's still fun. The game is supposed to be fun. It doesn't have to be a written rule that you can't do this, you can't do that. So, you know, I'm very curious about the game. Will I get it? I don't know. If there's a computer version of the game, I might get it just to play the computer version. But I'm going to take the wait and see approach. You know, as I say many times, because especially on the sit down episodes that I do, I'm asked off and on, you know, hey, DT, you play any video games? And I always say the same thing. Yeah, I play the old arcade stuff. I still play Ms. Pac-Man. I still play Phoenix and Gallagher and all that shit. But I have not gotten a game, like I haven't gotten PS4 or PS5. And the reason why I haven't gotten any of those newer games is because I used to be that guy that if I start playing a game, I'll play for 6 hours. I mean, when I had gotten the PS3, and started playing like basketball leagues and baseball leagues, I would stay there 4, 5, 6 hours. And at this stage of the game, being married, working technically 2 jobs and, you know, spending time with family like I am tonight here Thursday, I'm on location. That's why the audio may sound a little different. You know, I don't have that kind of time anymore. And yeah, I'm sure I could make the time. But man, you know, I don't want to get into that habit where I start, you know, like playing a game and I don't put it down for 4 hours. I would never have one of those YouTube channels where I'm playing a game and streaming. You know, I thought if I ever did that, it would probably be the opposite, that people would want to tune in to see me fuck up. Like, other than the retro, you know, vintage stuff, you know, I don't know if I would do good in any of the new games. So even the Grand Theft Autos, when I was playing Grand Theft Auto, I never, ever completed the game. I never, ever completed the missions. All I did was drive around and run people over and get chased by the cops and play the music on the radio. That's all I would do. I would just try to find the vintage cars that I would fucking pop for. And that's all I would do. Drive around the neighborhood, play the music. You know, that song I Ran, one of my favorite songs, you know, it's from the, 1981. I would drive around and thing and just kill people. I know it sounds ridiculous, but that's me. And I would do that for hours and have fun. So, all right, guys, I'm going to jet out of here. So keep it simple for tonight, because we do have a pair of shows this weekend. And once again, DonTony.com. If you haven't done so already, download the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show episode from Tuesday. What was that? The 29th of June, May? Oh, no, the 30th of May. Yeah, check out that episode. I'm telling you, you know, some people, I actually had a few people say to me, wow, you know, this is the favorite DTKC collab, you know, reunion, return, you know, reformation since we've been doing this. And we covered Mania, we covered the draft, we've covered Backlash, a few other things. We had fun Tuesday. And definitely recommend you go check that out. And don't forget the history show. I posted that Tuesday as well. And there was some glitch in the system. For some reason, that didn't get uploaded till late Tuesday night. But go check those out. And if you are interested, Saturday morning, June 3rd. I almost said June 3rd. Come today. June 3rd, Saturday, 11:05 a.m. I will be on YouTube for the Don Tony Show. And then Sunday, we have your usual sit down. And we go from there. My friends, thank you for joining me. Appreciate it. Thank you, as always, for the support. And I will catch you all again soon. Ciao.